Welcome to Sustainable Sessions, hosted by yours truly, Lucas and Lauren. Episode 15, featuring Logan Good.
Hi, I'm Logan Good. I'm 26 years old. I am currently living in Switzerland. I just moved here from New York City, but I grew up in Presque Isle, Maine in the US. I'm here for a second master's degree in partnership with the United Nations to address climate change. I have a vision of human prosperity for centuries to come for all humans. And I have a mission to positively impact the lives of 1 billion people, whether directly or indirectly. So my background is mechanical engineering and industrial design. I spent the last few years helping to build startups with social and environmental impact, but realized that this didn't scale to the impact that I wanted. So earlier this year, I started to focus more on building a presence on social media. And I believe that's how you both found me, was probably through TikTok, I suppose.
Yes.
Awesome. Yeah, no, that was a great intro. And yes, we did find you through TikTok. So you're definitely making a name for yourself for sure.
And definitely all the subtle flex with all the education you have going on there. So I think it'll be really
fun. Yeah, it's, you know, it's been many years of education, the majority of my life, but it's, you know, it's provided me with a lot of benefit, I think.
Awesome. Yeah. So like, yeah, we can just kind of dive in there. There's so much to touch on there. So excited to get through it all. Let's just really quickly, like even when people like find out your name and check out your website, right at the bottom there, you have all your past projects. And it's worked on so many different social issues from like the wastewater treatment to mobility, women's health. Can you talk a little bit about those past projects and maybe some memorable moments or like things that really stuck out from your, those initial experiences you've had?
Yeah. I guess, you know, it sort of ties into my story, which is very, you know, relative to plastic pollution. As I said, I'm always trying to increase my impact and sort of get to the next level of scale. And beforehand, I'd worked on a lot of very individualized projects or projects that directly impacted small groups of people. But now I'm sort of more focused on these larger projects. So in 2014, I was a leader of an engineering team that traveled to Central and South America. And we did these different engineering projects, water supply, wastewater treatment. And they were just for these small remote villages. And I remember this one trip we made to the small village in Ecuador. It's called Valle de la Laguna. And we were doing a water supply project. And we were looking at the stream that this community got their potable water from. And I just remember looking at that stream as we were scouting it out and seeing this barrage of plastic pollution. And that really stuck with me. And so I went back to the US and I sort of kept a mental note of it. And after some time, I moved to New York City and I started noticing the same items polluting the streams in and rivers in New York City as were polluted in that small stream in Ecuador. So the commonality of the types of items I found, the bottles, the bags, the pieces of styrofoam, it was the same in both places, but the context was completely different. Big city, New York City, versus a small remote village. And so that was when I started to think of plastic pollution is going to be this focus of mine and that it would scale. It would be more of an indirect impact than the previous projects that I had worked on, but it could scale a lot more if you can even, you know, begin to address a small component of it.
Yeah. And I think a big thing too is a lot of people, when you throw stuff away, there's really no away when, you know, all that plastic waste goes into our streams. And it's, I think I saw a video, it might have been also in South America as well, like online, and it was just like a flow of just like trash, and it was just like insane. Yes. To see. And like now that videos are kind of circulating around the internet, and especially with your type of content as well, like people are able to kind of see that. In terms of like, I know because you do like trash pickups as well, the content that you show your viewers and followers and stuff, kind of what kind of message do you want to share with them when you're doing those types of things?
Yeah, it's, there's many components to it. And like I said, I'm most known for plastic pollution, but I'm now starting to rebrand, and I'm going to stick to plastic pollution, but I'm also starting to focus more on climate change. With any social platform that I'm on, I'm trying to raise awareness. I'm trying to inspire action. That is a huge one. And entertain and educate. And marrying both of those is very important to me on especially TikTok. You have the problem of echo chambers, which is on social media, any influencer or anyone who has any type of following has, you know, people are following them because they have similar viewpoints and opinions. And if you are just speaking of a certain topic to, and it's only reaching the people that have a similar opinion or viewpoint as you, that's the echo chamber. And so you need to break free from that echo chamber and start to reach people who have a different viewpoint and, you know, help raise awareness to them. And TikTok is a great platform for that because of its virality. So you can start to reach, you know, many, many people. And even if they don't agree on it or they don't interact with it, they still, you get eyes on it, which is important. And so, you know, those types of tools are really important in that. Doing beach cleanups, I try to show what I'm finding. And sort of the scale of what I'm finding. Of course, a lot of my cleanups had taken place in Coney Island in New York City, very polluted beach. And you can see from the videos some of the, you know, just maddening things that I found on the beach, you know, from any type of product that you would use in the bathroom. Needles was a big one. The incredible amount of microplastics I found. Everything you can find on the beach. So, you know, raising awareness to the audience and, you know, trying to help them get past this barrier that's stopping them from taking action. There's always some type of barrier, and there's many things. And even just the pandemic itself was a barrier to get people to go outside. So of course we need safety in those cases, but, I tried to marry that education with entertainment because people go on social media, they don't just want to be educated all the time. They're trying to get away from what they're doing. And to be entertained, I would say 70% entertainment in 30% of like sustainability undertones is a perfect match. Really entertain them, but tie in some sort of message that gets them thinking, maybe gets them commenting and talking. I think that's super important.
Yeah, no, that was a great answer. And I think the way you explained it and the way your mind processes this idea of marrying content that focuses on like the educational component, but also this entertainment component is so key to like actually allow your ideas to make impact and to get people inspired on these topics. And I love the beach cleanups. I think those are so great too, because I think it allows people to see this as like a problem that really does connect so many people. So you see like, oh, that's just a third world problem. But then when you're seeing it on your own like doorstep or in a community nearby, like it really starts to think, okay, we need to take global action on this. So yeah, that's really interesting. I guess the next question to ask is, why did you kind of get on TikTok and like, what's that experience been? And has it been unique from the other social media platforms that you try to, and like the content that you try to put out?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So like I had mentioned was that, you know, social media was the next move after working on startups for some years, because I knew that I could touch a lot more people. I could essentially build this, you know, global community that I could bring together. And I've had an Instagram account for some time, but I realized that I liked making videos back last year at some point. I like making travel videos and different types of videos. It's just more dynamic than, and you can be more creative than just taking the typical photos that I found myself taking on Instagram, the travel photos and stuff like that. Beautiful, but you see it everywhere. And so I just wanted a new canvas, a new way to be creative. So I tried YouTube. I made a few videos. They are very mediocre, to say that. But that long form content was really a stressor almost, and having to film it and always having to walk around with a camera on your face if you're doing some type of vlog content, and thinking of how you're going to continue to hook someone throughout a 10-minute video, and also get, you know, make your way through your day and go to your job or school or whatever it is. It was just a lot. So I tried that for a couple of videos, and then I found TikTok. And I got a lot of criticism from friends. I'm sure you've heard of this from everyone who is around our age. Like, at first, everyone starts to get criticism, but I knew it was an opportunity in February or March, I think I started. And I posted a couple videos. They were about plastic pollution. They didn't really take off. My third video really took off. It hit 1 million views, I believe. And so, you know, within the third day, I was hooked. Like, it was so unfortunate, but it was love at first sight. I was hooked. I mean, I knew I could now have an impact by reaching, you know, 1 million people with a 15-second video. And so, you know, and that video was more comedic. And so it's all started clicking. Like, this is how we're going to raise the awareness. And yeah, like I said, everyone was a little bit weary about this, you know, me being 26 and focusing on TikTok, but that connection with the younger generation is key to me. They're not only going to be the people who will be voting at the polls within the next few years, but they're going to be entering the workforce, and they're going to be voting with their dollars in the coming years as well. So it's not all on them to solve this problem. And it's on everyone, but we also need to sort of pave the way for continued sustainable environmentalism throughout the coming generations. So yeah, TikTok was definitely that short form, easy. I can have an idea, I can make a video and post it, and then I could go back and make another video just like that. It was very quick, and yeah, like, people give up on this stuff very early on. But when you get a video going viral your third time posting, it's totally different. So it's tough to speak to some of the accounts that didn't take off right from the start. And now it's even more difficult than it was prior to this to become viral on the platform. But I sort of started using it because you have to be super creative and unique to stand out from everyone else. And TikTok is a really great platform in another sense, that all of the people, the leading organizations, the world leaders, are on Instagram and Twitter. They're great accounts for them. They know how to use it. They know how to connect with their audience. But there's this level of professionalism that they have to maintain. You don't see anyone who's running the UN social media accounts like cracking jokes or posting a climate meme or something like that. Like, and that's understandable. They obviously have that level of professionalism to maintain. But the opportunity comes in the influencer, where the barrier is much lower and you can crack jokes and you can make some of the cringy videos and the types of content that I've made, which, you know, a platform that the UN would have would not accept being posted. And none of them have really found a place on TikTok, none of those leading organizations. So there is so much opportunity for people to start gaining an influence on social media through TikTok, because these other big organizations don't know how to use it or how to really utilize it at this point.
I think a big thing too is that we almost need to bridge this gap between these big organizations that have all the information, the education to like pass down to these younger generations. But then we kind of have people like you that are like slowly bridging that gap. Do you find you have any kind of like questions, like common questions that you get from like your younger audience, and like how do they kind of react to your content in the comments?
I love that you said bridge the gap, because that is what I've been preaching to my colleagues the past like week. Because I've been doing this whole rebrand and shifting direction and now starting to really hone in on climate change, I've been thinking bridge the gap between this very professional entity that's very reliable and just does education, and the entertainment aspect. So I really love that you said that. I wanted to say that as well. As far as what people say in the comments, I get a lot, I mean, it really depends on the types of videos I post. I get a lot of different feedback. A lot of it is really good. A lot of it is just casual negativity that you find on social media. But I have posted even more like controversial videos just to spark people's attention and sort of get them engaged with it. So I noticed on one of my videos that went quite viral, I think 8 or 9 million views on it, I was sifting out plastic from the sand. And first people thought it was fake, so you have a lot of that. And then I sort of propped it up on the sand, and there was all of this microplastic in the strainer. And so I grabbed the microplastic and I was showing the camera, and some of it started to fall out in the sand. So I both got, this video is fake, you set it up, and number two was that you poured it back in the sand. And so like people had a field day with this. You can just imagine. And the analogy I had told everyone was, you know, I felt like I was, you know, an adult on the playground getting kicked by all the little kids. But it was so awesome, because they literally made that go viral. 9 million views, 9 million people saw that because some people decided that they wanted to make fun of it. That's great. That is awesome to me. So I started trolling people back just because I knew it would get a reaction and go viral. And so I would do videos where I am, like one of my recent videos, I am holding a bag of plastic pollution that I just collected, and it's zoomed in on me and I'm dumping it out, and I'm saying that I'm dumping it back in the sand. But then I zoom out and you see that I'm dumping it on a tarp to sort through it so I could recycle it. But it's like, share this with a friend to see how triggered they get. It's fun things like that. You have to, you know, it's typical marketing tactics. You have to use that in sustainability. You can't just go on, well at least in my experience with it, you can't just go on and say, this is the problem and this is what I'm doing. It's lame. And I posted these lame videos too. And, you know, I was like, this is going to give people so much information. But then it gets sent out to 3,000 people. versus multiple millions. So there's levels to this, and you have to be able to work that system, I think.
Yeah, no, I think you said that so well. And like, genuinely, there are those, like, you know, quote unquote marketing tactics that you have to deploy to make sure you gain people's attention. But like, even going back to what you're saying about bridging the gap, like that is really the goal. So it's like, if you can keep hooking these people on with entertaining content, and then at the end of the whole thing, they're eventually getting a good dose of quality information that they never would have touched or even gotten near without this, then it's such a great way to think about it. So no, I really do. Yeah, that's a great point.
And I guess a question for you is, where do you get your resources? And if people want to learn more or like get more information, where do you suggest that they go? Like, do you have any other podcasts or like books, articles, or like other social media accounts that you would suggest?
Yeah. So I'm a big advocate for the United Nations and all of their programs. I come from a science background, so I can really appreciate and dig through some of the research and find the value in it, which, you know, a typical reader wouldn't do. So looking on the Instagram accounts and Twitter accounts of NASA Climate, the IPCC, United Nations, the UNEP, NOAA even. So they provide the information, the verified information that they have on these platforms in relatively digestible formats, whether it's like a graphic or a video. So those would be my go-tos. I get a lot of my information either from their website or their socials. But for someone just beginning and who's just interested in learning more, getting inspired, I would say documentaries on Netflix. This is huge when I first started out. There's some really great documentaries on Netflix, if any listeners have Netflix, and they have a lot of facts, and they do provide a lot of inspiration. So A Plastic Ocean would be a good one. Bill Nye, Science Guy, not the TV show that he did that everyone our age dearly loved during class, but he has a documentary that talks about his work on climate change. How to Change the World, that one was about Greenpeace, the starting of Greenpeace, so that one's really interesting. Inconvenient Sequel, that's with Al Gore. He did the Inconvenient Truth back decade ago or more, but he did the Inconvenient Sequel. That's up on Netflix. And one that really got me, I'm not sure if it's on Netflix or not, was Before the Flood with Leonardo DiCaprio. Like, everyone recognizes Leonardo DiCaprio, and if he's talking, I listen, and he has some really great resources at hand and a really great team that led him around the world to witness the sort of impacts of climate change and what can be done. And he spoke at the UN and stuff, so even his social media accounts are not even run by him. He just has his name to it and posts really credible information on there.
That's awesome. Yeah. And I think that's a really great way for our users to like want to learn more and just get more involved, even if they're not at the point where they want true education yet. A lot of them, like you said, provide good digestible content that they could take to kind of get them going. I guess to kind of build on that too, when you talked about inspiration, obviously you're very inspired on plastic pollution and a lot of other social impact ideas. Like, where did this all kind of stem from? Like, can you like kind of click it back to a point in your life where someone, maybe it was your family, parents, friends, like what really got you going, even if it was at an early age, and then what's allowed you to maintain that steam going forward? Like, you're 26 now, obviously you've been doing this for many years. What's been like this underlying thread that's pushed you through all of this?
Wow, that is a really great question. So when I reflect on my childhood, I think of three things that were big components of my childhood that I treasured. I didn't even realize that, were a big part of me back then, but it was adventure and exploration. So we lived on this farm in, you know, rural Maine. And so I, you know, found myself exploring the wilderness a lot. The second one was being really creative and making stuff. I was always like this young inventor making all of these contraptions. And so that was a big component. And then the third one was helping people. And it started by seeing some people who were homeless in my community and asking for money or food outside of certain stores. And when I look back, I had always asked my parents at such a young age if I could get a few extra dollars so that I could go give it to them, or we would be at a restaurant and you would see someone outside. And so I would order additional food, or I would eat, you know, only a small portion of my meal so I could share it with them afterwards. And I would want to speak with them and connect with them. So those three components have sort of been very common throughout the extent of my life. And although like I get detracted here and there a little bit, now that I've really reflected, I see those three things. So that those all started to evolve when I started to find other opportunities like Engineers Without Borders. And that was my first year of undergrad at the University of Maine. And that was an opportunity to help people. So it was a new way to help people that I could also involve traveling with and being creative to a certain extent with. And I got into design and engineering. So I wanted to create products, you know, different types of products that, you know, would be used in the home for electricity or to sanitize water, whatever it may be. I always wanted to sort of invent these new solutions to global challenges. Of course, now I try not to use solutions as much. I try to use, you know, addressing global challenges, but it was very common when I look back. So if anyone is trying to figure out what they really want to do with their life, maybe that is a good starting point, is reflecting on what gave you energy as a child. It may not just stand out to you like sports. That's not one of the you know, my top three. But it was, sports were awesome, but it wasn't what really fueled my childhood. So, you know, just looking back on those is very important, I think, to see what gives you energy. And even when you didn't have those limitations as a child, what were you doing? And so now if you can do those and just scale them, and you can, you know, the possibilities are endless, and you need that energy, that drive, that inspiration to keep you going. Because especially when you're trying to help people and you're focused on environmentalism, there's a lot of negativity and you can have a lot of negative thoughts, and it's always difficult. It's always a real challenge to work on this stuff. So you can quit very easily, but if you're really gonna persevere, you need to have those things to fall back on, those values and those things that keep you energized to push through all of that.
Wow, that gave me like chills a little bit. No, it's, I think it's crazy because you don't think about like how you even got started, then somehow you're just like on this journey and you're like really excited about it. And I just have like some questions in terms of your education now, because you're moving forward with your second master's. And like, I was even debating just as I'm finishing my undergrad, like I didn't even know there was masters in like climate change. Where do you kind of see yourself going? And what you suggest like for people to like pursue a university degree or pursue a master's, like what are your thoughts kind of like on that?
Yeah, so I never thought when I was an undergrad, I would pursue a master's degree. That was the last thing on my mind. Get me out of school. So here I am on my second master's degree. There's a lot of value in an additional level of education. I almost would you know, enjoy being a lifelong learner, not, you know, taking multiple more degrees, but that lifelong learning is really important, whether you're in the classroom or not. During my education, I was helping to build startups and stuff. So education is an investment, I think. If you think of it just as you need to go to school and you have to pay for it, you have all these student loan debts, then it's a real turnoff. But once you start thinking about it as a personal investment, now it has a lot of value. And you can't put a number on personal investment. I would rather pay for the rest of my life to be able to continue to personally invest in myself and my personal growth. I saw after undergrad, I had a bachelor of science in mechanical engineering. And I really wanted to look at the more creative side of that. And that was industrial design for me, essentially product design. And this program enabled me in part to live in New York City for a while, live in London for some time, and also live in Tokyo. So you get this global perspective on design and these grand challenges. And so that gave me a lot of value. That was, you know, a big leap from living in rural Maine to now living in, you know, these major cities around the world. Nothing could, you know, if I had just traveled to them, I would have saved a lot of money, right? But I also got an education while I was doing that. And it was really important that I found what I was passionate about and focused outside of my education on projects related to that and explored it in my spare time. I didn't just watch, stay on social media or watch Netflix when I went home every evening. I was thinking about, you know, what am I truly passionate about? What do I want to do with my life? And then these things started to really all come together. And so I started working on it, you know, outside of school, and that fueled me. And then I started taking what I was learning in the classroom. While I'm sitting in class, some type of concept comes up and I'm relating it to what's happening outside on my project. So I'm helping to launch startups based on plastic pollution in rivers and reducing plastic waste and stuff like that. What gets me to my second master's degree is that I would pay for this degree, but this one was fortunately paid for me. So that's was a great opportunity, and it's in partnership with the United Nations. And I saw the impact that I needed to have, and to have a now with this degree, a Master of Science in International Management with an emphasis on climate action. This is going to be that next step of becoming this, what I would like to think, a world leader, a household name at some point in addressing some of these global challenges. So this year, I have everything set up. I know what I want from it. And that is really important if you're going to go into a master's degree or any type of higher education, to know what your goals are, know what your vision is, and know what you want to get out of it. And so I have a year here in Switzerland, and with all of these resources and everything, this is like a launch pad. This is a runway for me. I have a year to do whatever I want, to do, you know, anything that I can to launch this and sort of get these big projects off the ground.
Yeah, no, that was a really great explanation. I think that's a great way to look at higher education, even if it's something that you're not necessarily paying for. I mean, you're from the United States too, so obviously, like, when we think about whoever's going to be listening to this and around the world and the cost of education, that's always a factor to consider. But I really like how you tie it in so much with your life. Like, you always had an application for what you're planning to use whatever you learned on. So whether it was the projects that you're working on, I think it's important to have real life things going on, whether it's like an entrepreneurial thing or just being involved as a volunteer in a project. and then tying that back into your education. Like, you've just done it so well, and it's just a great way to approach education.
Everything kind of just clicks. I guess kind of to, sorry, go ahead. Were you going to say something?
Well, it's funny you say that, because along the way, there's so much gray area and you feel lost. Sometimes you feel lost day after day or for an entire week, and then you feel like you have it and then you feel lost. But then, and it's important to know that I haven't always had it figured out, and I'm still growing and learning and sort of fine tuning things. But I've spent so much time being introspective and focusing on these things that I want. So it looks like I have everything together, right? But, it's been a long journey, just to 26 at this point. So,
there's definitely ups and downs with everything. Like, even us being kind of like sustainable entrepreneurs, like, you're not always going to get like an email back from like certain people, or like, you're going to do all this reach out and do all this work and not see the results that you necessarily want to see. And it's just like, as long as you're going a step in the right direction, you know that the impact that you're making, what you're doing, is doing something greater beyond yourself. So that's kind of how I like try to perceive everything.
Yeah. If you really care about it and it's part of your goals, then you will do whatever it takes. But like I said, there's so many barriers to surpass to get a person to that level where I'm planning to send emails to Al Gore's team within the next week or so. Like, I will do whatever it takes at this point to achieve my dreams. But it's taken so many barriers to overcome to say, I'm just going to do this. I'm just going to do this because I'm that passionate about it. And you sort of have to not only be selfless, but you have to be selfish in some regards when you're thinking of your goals, what you want in life. You have to write down everything that you want out of your life. I don't know who coined this, but the rocking chair test. When you're 80 years old and you're in your rocking chair and you're reminiscing on life, what are the things that you're most proud of? And even more profound than that, what things do you regret? And whatever it may be, is it getting a yacht, or is it, doing water supply in rural villages? Write it all down and start accomplishing that. You have to be both selfish and selfless in your vision and in your dreams and in your goals. You need to get everything that you want out of life, but if you can tie in sustainability and social impact and helping people, that's all the better.
Yeah, no, that was like inspiring for us to even hear that too. And I hope a lot of the viewers that are hearing that too can really take that to respect. That's something that I honestly say a lot of times too, maybe not the rocking chair, but even like on your deathbed. And it's like, if you look back really on life, it's hard to gain that perspective at a young age because you're obviously not there just yet, but it's a good way to really kind of not necessarily put fear, but put some pressure on you to think, okay, like, I have to take this seriously. Like, these are my years where I can make impact. I'm young. Like, I have energy. If I need to spend a couple all-nighters and do certain stuff, it's going to be a little bit more challenging when I have kids, family, and then even beyond that too. So I love like that you have that perspective. And I think that's kind of a good way to segue into like the end of the show here. So if there's one thing that you can leave, and I think a theme that I love for you to share to our audience too is more about taking action, taking those steps. We talked a lot about barriers and trying to get past that. If there's like either a quote or an idea, a story that you have that really inspired you to help take those first steps and taking action, is there something that you can leave the viewers with to kind of end off the show here?
Yeah, I love leaving all the viewers with some sort of action items. So let me just check here. So no, because I really want to make sure that everyone is left with some value here. So I myself, after this podcast, and I hope that both of you will take some sort of climate or environmental action as leaders in the space. And I would like to extend that challenge to all of the viewers as well. Can we get all of the viewers of this, all of the listeners, to take just one action, whatever that may be? I have, if you just go to Google and type in 170, the number 170, 170 actions to combat climate change. Type that into Google. There's a list. It shows the Sustainable Development Goals, and you can look at all of the different very simple things that you can do, whether it's taking a 5-minute shower today, or not eating meat or dairy, or just going out and cleaning up, you know, one piece of litter in your neighborhood, or 5 pieces or 20 pieces, whatever it may be, just taking one action. I will do it. I hope both of you will take one action. And for anyone listening, get a member of your family or a friend to join you. Now you've already doubled the impact, right? You have 2 people doing it. There's scaling here. Let's keep doubling this. So now take one photo of those, whatever the action was, that one piece of plastic that you picked up, and put it on your stories or on your Snapchat, and tag your friends in it, tag me in it, on Instagram at Logan Good, and tag you guys in it. Definitely reach out to me in my DMs on Instagram. Send me the photo, and I will post it to my story, so that, and I will get all of my followers to go and follow whichever account send me the photos. So now we're starting to have impact, not by being monetized here, but just by providing value in multiple ways. And now we're starting to have action and really start to create these scales of environmental impact here.
That's awesome.
Amazing. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, yes. We'll definitely share that out. We're going to take action today for sure. And yeah, we'll encourage anyone in our lives to do so as well. And like that's really all it comes down to at the end of the day, just starting the ball, and then it just continues to keep
making
going.
It get bigger.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, of course. Yeah. So I will definitely be taking some action, and I challenge all the listeners and you both as well. So let's go take some action.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to this podcast. If you would like to learn more, visit us at www.last20.ca. Until next time, stay sustainable.